To me, it feels like this. Yes, I think that there's some theater involved. However, I also think that they're like, we have to somehow validate everything, and we can't validate anything unless we start from the beginning. Which, by the way, if they take that course, that is a major timeline setback for them. Like, if they're doing it for real, it's going to take time. Hello and welcome to the Autonicast. I'm Kirsten Korosek, transportation editor at TechCrunch.
And I'm Ed Niedermeyer. I'm the author of Ludicrous, the Unvarnished Story of Tesla Motors, a book that some are calling the most prescient book about Tesla to date.
Some say. In other news, I'm Alex Roy, the founder of the Human Driving Association and the co-founder and principal of the most insightful and finest advisory consulting agency in transportation, but now also AI, robotics, and general tech. Johnson and Roy, great to see you both.
That was a very long intro. Anything else?
Whatever. Kirsten, you asked me not to do a whole thing where I drop a topic we haven't prepped for. So I decided to waste your time with something else. Talking about
okay, thank you.
Me.
Thank you.
Me.
Okay, cool.
Well, let's talk about me.
Let's not. But let's talk about things that are related to your areas of interest. How about that? That's a good compromise. AVs and EVs. Wow, what a fun and interesting week that we've had. So
some things happening.
Some things are happening. It turns out that AVs are still hard and EVs are still hard. That's the theme, with lots of moving parts. So to kick things off, and probably the most recent thing is that Cruise has announced that they are now back, kind of, driving in manual mode in Phoenix. So we all predicted a while back that they would definitely, and they've even said when they're going to come back, they weren't going to come, they're going to probably come back in a different market. What I find interesting is not that they're coming to Phoenix. That makes perfect sense. They already have had presence there. What I find interesting, and I want your opinions on as to why, they are going back not just to manual mode, but basically doing maps and kind of starting from the beginning. And is this theater? So my question is this theater to show we're really going from the very beginning, or are they actually starting over from on a technical end of things? Which one is it?
But hold on a minute, Kirsten. I we're recording as the news is coming out. Did they make an announcement about maps?
Yeah, it says what? So it says here in the TechCrunch story, it says Cruise will resume manual driving of its autonomous vehicles to create maps and gathered road information in certain cities, starting with Phoenix, the company said Tuesday. So this is straight from the company's, lips.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that this is really fascinating that they're going all the way back to mapping, because why?
Right.
I don't think we have clear answers about that.
How long has Cruise been in Phoenix?
I mean, they've had pilots for years off and on in Phoenix. I want to say one of the first stories we wrote about that was, gosh, maybe 2018. Is that too early? It's been a while that they've been around Phoenix. So again, their whole premise prior to this whole thing happening was that they could, because they had mastered San Francisco, they could go to any market and launch that much faster due to their technical capabilities. And then they made a bunch of announcements and started showing up in a bunch of cities. So what is this theater or a complete reset? They don't trust anything, so they're starting from the beginning.
I remember, Kirsten, I think you were on stage with Kyle Vogt, where he was saying how easy and quick it would be to stand up a new city because of their foundational learnings in San Francisco.
Correct.
All right, so here's what I'm going to say. I'm not saying I'm an expert in autonomous vehicles mapping in new cities. What I am saying is
so, I mean, it doesn't make sense, right? From a technical perspective, it doesn't make sense to go somewhere where you've been on the ground for
years,
right? And to map again. So then Alex, so it must be theater, right? We're taking a first step back onto the road thing. This is a public communications thing more than a technical thing, right?
Is that the deal? There's only two possibilities here. Possibility A is that it's just an excuse to get back on the road and show forward progress to analysts or anyone else looking at the company who doesn't have any idea how the tech works. That's option A. Option B is they literally are starting from the ground up on mapping for whatever reason. But it's been how many months since the incident?
October 2nd.
Okay. So, and since new leadership came in, or they've been bringing people in over the last few months, honestly, I find it very hard to believe that new leadership that has come in and anywhere in the company has had sufficient time to reboot the safety culture in a way that would be necessary. Remember, there's two things going on over there. There was a lack of safety culture, and then there were clearly some, I wouldn't call them technical issues, but just like with Uber back in the day, a series of management decisions which impacted how components of the business interacted. In other words, technical teams with operations teams. And it's that interplay, it's not easy to reboot well or successfully or at all in a short span of time. I don't buy it. So I'm going to vote with A, it's theater and some communications. And there might be, no, I think it's A. I think it's A.
Yeah, there's.
I'm a little torn on it, but go ahead, Ed. What were you going
to
say?
No, it's just hard to understand, right? Because mapping is sort of such a foundational piece of the tech stack that, like,
not to Tesla.
let's save the Tesla talk. We got plenty of Tesla talk but it's just such a fun, like, the and the idea that they're starting from scratch, as Alex said, right? Like the failures that led to all the problems in San Francisco were not necessarily, they didn't immediately suggest that, like, this is a, you know, start from the beginning. And if you are starting from the beginning, why keep this bloated corporate structure, right? Like, why not shutter the, like, if this is genuinely about starting from scratch, like, start from scratch. There's no reason to hang on to Cruise as an organization at that point. But hang on, just let me to finish. Like, what's interesting about it is, like, I actually like on a conceptual level, this idea of easing back into the road, getting back, like doing it somewhere like Phoenix, not in San Francisco, starting in manual mode, starting rebooting the public communication piece of it. The question I have is, like, is there someone who's going to be sort of speaking for the company, right? Because like taking these steps and leaving it to people like us to interpret them. Again, like even if it makes sense to us on some level to do this as a way to start rebuilding public trust, like they're still not really. There needs to be more communication about this, right? If this is a communication effort, then communicate about it more than just sort of like. And no offense at all, Kirsten, because it's not about like giving you know TechCrunch or you know media outlets like a line like. You know, we're going back to start mapping again, right? Like that just creates confusion. Like if the point of this is for communication, then communicate more than you are right now. Cause otherwise mm-hmm. like this could be a potentially good step forward.
Well, okay. So first of all, to correct myself from a moment ago, it looks like they had that pilot with Walmart back in 2020 in Scottsdale area. So, and there might've been some movement even prior to that, but that I was able to confirm that. So it's been at least 4 years that they've been off around that area. And the manual mode versus and mapping is what is really getting me here. Because let's say they had said, we're going to go back, we're going to go to Phoenix, an area we're somewhat familiar with, and we're going to drive an autonomous mode with a human safety driver. That seems like a more natural step. This feels like there is like such mistrust potentially in the technology that they're starting from scratch. That's why I don't like understand that manual mode mapping piece. It the rest of it is like, okay, sure. Different market, easing into it, fine. But the mapping part is confusing to me.
Let's be serious, Kirsten. You're both right. If Cruise had truly, with the events that occurred last October and in San Francisco, okay, in a more complicated ODD were outliers, like extreme edge cases, that would mean their system was really well baked, but with a couple of things you need to tweak. And then they would have no problem doing passenger service here with the safety driver. But the fact that they're not means that the technical and operational problems run so deep that they're executing this theater here locally. Look, when I was working at Argo 3-4 years ago, I would come to Phoenix and I would go over to I live right by that Walmart now. I'd go to that Walmart in a rental car and camp out and watch the cruise vehicles come and go. And I'd follow them around and kind of try to infer their capabilities. Like, they're basically going backwards in time, years. What could they possibly learn?
Yeah. So I've got a little bit here from their blog post. So just I'll very quickly read it. So they say that the steps prior to driverless operations are this. First is identifying high fidelity location data for road features and map information like speed limits, stop signs, traffic lights, lane point, right turn only lanes, and more. This is all stuff they should have already done, by the way.
Yep.
Having current and accurate information will help autonomous vehicle understand where it is and the location of certain road features. Again, going back to some of the comments Kyle made, like, hey, our base of technology allows us to go into a city and not have to, remember, map everything and start from scratch. So
2019, you know, Watts, it's AV's back.
Well, but hang on, guys, because there's actually, right, so if Cruise were, right, like, so in that scenario, I think you're right, Alex. I think you made a really good point there, which is like, if there were just like little minor issues and the fundamental confidence was there, right, like the goal would be Austin, right? Austin is where they're supposed to debut a service. That was their next sort of city that they're going to, and they were going to do the Cruise Origin there. And like, a lot of money has been invested in that Cruise Origin. What's interesting though, is that there's no way to deploy that Cruise Origin unless you're ready to go fully driverless, because there's no backup control. No, they kind of screwed themselves there in a really like interesting way, right? By building up to this design that doesn't have a control, because then what, right? Like, then are they going to offer rides, but like in bolts, which are clearly not great robotaxis, like, or taxis of any kind?
So here's the final piece where they say, we also measure our perception and prediction systems against our elevated performance criteria using trained safety drivers as benchmark. So then they'll go through their validation through supervised autonomous driving on public roads, in addition to ongoing simulation and closed course driving. And during this phase, the Cruise vehicles will drive themselves and a safety driver will be present. So they're laying out their steps.
Was that written by ChatGPT?
To me, it feels like this. Yes, I think that there's some theater involved. However, I also think that they're like, we have to somehow validate everything, and we can't validate anything unless we start from the beginning. Which, by the way, if they take that course, that is a major timeline setback for them.
Well, and validating.
If they want to do it for real, that doesn't mean in a week from now being like, guess what? We made it for the first step. And, like, if they're doing it for real, it's going to take time.
And so like, but it sounds like their benchmark. So basically they're having people go out and drive in manual mode. And then like, that's their benchmark for say, like, it seems like a tiny sample size for validation. but at least Tesla, at least you could say we've got a big fleet. We got a lot of data that we can pull from. How many drivers do they have out there? How many miles are they pulling up to create this standard? Like, it anyway, we got to move on. This is too weird.
We
and obviously we're going to have to just sort of see how it all shakes out.
Right. We have reporters working on, and I'm sure there are others around, not just with TechCrunch, who are working on this, which is to kind of pull back a little bit what exactly is going on here and why the mapping, why this strategy. But in other AV-related news.
Schadenfreude news, yeah.
Yeah. Another AV startup that I had kind of forgotten about, but got a tip on and ended up with the scoop was has shut down, and that's Ghost Autonomy. Some might remember them as Ghost Locomotion, but basically this company has been around for a number of years, and I believe they founded, I want to say, in 2017, but at any rate, they have pivoted multiple times over the course of their, you know, initial launch. They raised $220 million or around that during their lifetime. Most notably, right, like just 6 months ago, a partnership with OpenAI and a bit of investment, small amount, $5 million. They've had a bunch of down rounds, but some of their biggest backers are like Founders Fund and Sutter Hill Ventures. And they have shut down and they've ceased all operations. Basically, they started with this idea of a self-driving kit that would allow a privately owned passenger vehicle to drive autonomously on highways. Sounds a lot like Comma AI, which still exists, by the way. That was going to happen in 2020. So obviously that never happened. And then there was a different pivot, and it was going to be that it was going to be all about a universal collision avoidance technology in an effort to get to market faster. And then it seems like maybe that there was another kind of pivot in there. My only thing to say about this is that the founder, John Hayes, did respond to my email, confirmed that about 100 people had been let go as a result. And I asked like what happened. And basically he said, ultimately the years required to bring the product to market could not be financed. But to me, it wasn't clear exactly what the product was. Was it the highway driving product? Was it this other last mile delivery thing that he had talked about? You know, what exactly was it? That's another AV company biting the dust.
So I've got sort of two. I know Alex is raring to chat about this one, but I've got two points here. One is,
don't be a hater. Just don't be a hater.
One is, and I want to say, so they got their last round 6 months ago, as you said, from OpenAI at the time. And I think it's a little bit emblematic, I think, of what was going on here. John Hayes, the founder and CEO, said that the company planned to explore applications of multimodal large language models, AI models that can understand, I'm quoting the TechCrunch reporting here, can understand text as well as images and self-driving. He argued that large language models offered a new way to understand the quote long tail. This is a company that is fundamentally.
But did you get the punchline though?
Yep. He said, okay, to understand the logic, added reasoning to complex scenes where current models fall short. Experts were skeptical of the approach. That's some dry Kirsten Korsak context.
We wrote a whole story about that back when he got that backing, and through our AI reporters who spend all of their time writing and understanding about what's happening around Gen AI, and they talked to multiple experts, and they're like, we don't get it. Right. You know, at that time, they're like, and OpenAI may have been like, we do get it, but like obviously it wasn't enough to help.
Or they may have been like, you're talking about using LLMs and AVs, and therefore we'll send you $5 million because we won't miss it anyway. But the point is that this is yet another sort of, let's call it, AI first approach to driving automation tech that is failing. And I think that's like just one of the big lessons of the last, you know, this AV cycle is that and frankly, there's some really interesting lessons there to be learned for the rest of the AI bubble about what this technology is good at and what it's not so good at. And it probably really makes sense for people to pay a little more attention to what's happened in the AV space, how it's shaken out, who the winners and losers are, and what the lessons of those are. The other one I just have to point out, and like, I'm not hating here, but like, you have to, you know, Comma AI has already come up. Comma AI has raised $18 million, as far as I can tell, in venture capital. $18 million. And they have a product. Like, it's kind of a weird product that they kind of have to, like, do a little dance around, you know, in terms of it, you know, the software's open source. But, like, it's a product. People have it in their vehicles. They're out there. They're using it. They're making money. I haven't seen the latest, like, claims about profitability or cash flow or whatever. But, like, they've raised $18 million and they're still around. That's clearly, like, they have something close to a business, if not a real, actual, legitimate business. Ghost, in contrast, raised $220 million for a very similar approach. Apparently, the thing that it seems like got closest to a real product was a product not unlike Commas. And yet, unlike Commas, it didn't even come to market. So, I kind of feel like there's two types of startups. There's startups that are racing to get to a business model that works, and there's startups that are playing the startup game. And again, like I haven't embedded with Ghost. I don't, maybe Alex can fill us in on some stuff. I don't know. You know, I'm sure there's some real technological achievements that they, you know, that money bought, right? But as a business, whew.
Look, I'll say this. I went to go visit Ghost, and he has come to the Autonicast party more than once. And there's some good people over there. I got a demo of, it's hard to classify. I rode in the passenger seat of one of their vehicles for their highway assist product. Now, this is where it gets murky. It was really comfortable and great, and I really enjoyed it. And in terms of like just riding in a vehicle with highway ADAS, it was more comfortable than riding in a Tesla with FSD or even autopilot on the highway. But you're correct. Ghost fundamentally had a what is the product problem? And I don't know. I guess they never solved it because the tech was interesting and behaved better than what you get in a Rivian or a Lucid. But they weren't in the business of selling ADAS systems to Rivian or Lucid, I don't think. And so it's disappointing because there was clearly something there at the time I went to visit them. And I hope that doesn't evaporate. I'll give you a very specific example. They had a thing called, I don't know if they actually branded it. Maybe it was just a behavioral term, like ambient driving. So for those who've never been in a Tesla, when you are on autopilot and you set a speed, call it 70 miles an hour. And in the adjacent lane, vehicles are traveling much slower. The Tesla will slow to reduce the delta speed between the two lanes. And that is a safety feature because you want to minimize that delta in the event that someone pulls out of that slower lane. Good. So that is a fine feature. The Ghost vehicle I rode in, you wouldn't even pick a speed, at least when I was in the vehicle. You would be on a highway. The system was always on. And then you just let go of the wheel. And then the car would match speeds with traffic. So, I don't know exactly how they did that because when I was in the vehicle, cars were driving at different speeds in the right adjacent lane and the left adjacent lane. But it selected a speed and a behavior that was very lifelike. And I really enjoyed that. And so Ghost, there was some creativity and imagination going on there, but there just was, I guess there wasn't enough product focus.
It sounds just from your description like there maybe wasn't quite as much focus on safety as there could have been.
Well, the thing is, again,
the HMI issues of how you describe that the hair on the back of my neck on end.
That's a different issue. And, you know, they had Jackie Glassman, former NHTSA, was their general counsel, and basically, I think, worked on safety there. So, you know, I wanted to see that thing productized and other things like it productized by them, because those things were good, or at least I enjoyed them, and I could clearly see there was something there. Now, what happened at a strategic level, I don't know, because I went to visit them last year, and that was before the LLM announcement. I have no idea what went down with that. But as Gary Marcus says, or let's say as Rodney Brooks likes to say, any technology has to be baked for like 10 years. Before you could confidently say this thing's ready for prime time and sufficiently safe. And that's true of almost anyone building anything, any robot that operates in the real world.
So. Yeah. Well, that brings us to, well, I guess there's sort of a collision here between the AV topics that we've been discussing, some themes from this conversation.
Right. So AVs are hard, right? We just pulled that out. EVs are also hard, you guys.
Don't you hate it when things are hard?
So on the cars are hard beat, Fisker continues to have issues. They have another NHTSA federal investigation. This one about their their doors not opening. And you know, I've been talking to like my coworkers about this whole idea of like, remember when in the pursuit of capital, because you need $1 billion to build a factory, there were two kind of roads. One was, we'll do the microfactory thing. We'll like, be asset or will be asset light, right? But all of the or do the more like Lucid thing. We're going to have amazing technology. Either way, they all had a capital problem. And all of those companies, regardless of those three paths, microfactories, asset light, or kind of we're going to build on the technology, vertically integrated, the whole shebang. They all went and got capital in the public markets via SPAC mergers. And a very large number of these companies have now since failed. Somehow Faraday Futures still exists. I don't even know how that's possible. But Arrival is gone. You know, Elms is gone. Ooh, Lordstown is gone. That Electric Last Mile, I think it was called. Elms? Something like that. Yeah. There's more than a dozen or so. They're all gone. And so we have Fisker that's left. Lucid is around still. Canoe is still around.
Arcimoto is still Canoe
with a guy who spent what? Quadruple the revenues on his private jet. Double.
Arcimoto is still around. They were just ordered to pay another organ manufacturer $1 million. So I'm like checking every day for the bankruptcy filing, but right. But they're still hanging on.
So we've established it's hard, and also at the legacy automaker level, it's hard. We've seen every automaker that went all in, and I was in a big debate with actually a friend about this last night, which is. He was like, the government caused this problem. And I'm like, well, prior to the government offering a lot of incentives in like the Inflation Reduction Act, actually what was happening is a lot of them were ignoring Tesla and then suddenly got scared of Tesla and suddenly all pivoted to not just this, we're going to, you know, slowly dip our toe into this and no, all electric portfolio. This is what we're doing.
Yeah. And thoughts and prayers to the conservatives on this one, but like literally like Wall Street had much more to do with everyone going all electric than the government did.
And I'm not saying that the Inflation Reduction Act didn't fuel the fire of pushing a specific kind of technology to bring domestic manufacturing back to the United States. We're going to do battery factories. I certainly agree with that. But previously it was about chasing the stock price, chasing Tesla.
Trying to be the next Tesla. Pivoted.
And they all pivoted, all trying to act like a startup. You know, this whole thing. And so it's not just the EV startups that have struggled here. It's legacy automakers too. So now we have them all dealing with softening demand around specifically luxury vehicles or premium priced EVs. People just don't want to spend that money. And the group of people who did, they've bought EVs.
There's a Gallup poll that just came out this week that really shows that's the case, that the more people are buying EVs, but as more people buy EVs, the people who haven't bought one are less interested in having one. But I wanted to read also from this Morgan Stanley note on Tesla, right? So because Tesla is it, right? The Tesla phenomenon is what everyone's been trying to recreate this whole time. And the first bullet point on here, And this is about their pivot. And so we haven't really mentioned the news, but you've probably heard it if you listen to this show, that Tesla has – there's a report from Reuters that said Tesla is shelving or at least delaying their low-cost EV platform in order to pivot to what Elon Musk subsequently announced, the reveal in August, a new dedicated robotaxi vehicle. A lot to unpack there. But just to kind of set the stage on what Kirsten was talking about, you know, Morgan Stanley has been Tesla's, you know, buddy and enabler all the way throughout this entire EV startup bubble. And they've, you know, Adam Jonas's notes have infamously like fueled the hysteria around EVs more than almost anybody. And here is what he's saying today. Number one bullet point about Tesla's pivot to robotaxi. Our thoughts on what we may see and not see at the August 8th robotaxi unveil. Number one, a recognition that making and selling EVs in a traditional consumer model may not create lasting economic value. In terms of generating a firm's cost of capital, the note goes on, the auto industry is one of the most difficult industries in the world. Within this segment, EVs is the least profitable and increasingly most competitive segment. Low-priced entry-level EVs are likely to be the fiercest sub-segment. Now, for me, it's kind of fascinating to see a book that you wrote 5 years ago encapsulated in one bullet point of a Morgan Stanley research note. So I'm a little – my mind's a little blown here. So I'm going to sit back on this one and I mean, is that – that's pretty damning, right? Because if Tesla's whole thing and all of these EV companies, their whole thing is start with the premium stuff and work your way down to the cheap EVs.
Yep.
Morgan Stanley is basically like, okay, have fun doing that, but you're not going to make money.
Right. And the thing is that we saw evidence of this, and we've talked about this on the show periodically, that, you know, we have all either publicly on the show or, you know, talking to people or even on stage interviewing folks, like why this belief that you can only save the world if you buy an expensive EV, and why aren't hybrids part of that? And the whole idea around profit margin, which once Tesla did become profitable, it did have a sizable, enviable margin. But to keep up with lagging demand, they've slashed prices. And so as a result, that margin has greatly narrowed. And at the same time, they're getting pressure, price pressure, and technology pressure over in China. And they only have one other lever to pull for revenue. And that's on automated driving, whether you want to call it a robo-taxi or what is the current product, FSD. So that is an interesting conundrum for the company, which is everyone has already pivoted. Ford has a Skunk Works, you know, to this low-cost EV idea. And Tesla is not only like they, it's almost like they've gone through this weird cycle where they like absorbed that, pivoted, and then were like, yep, moving on. And now have like gone all the way back to, yep, automated driving. That's where we make money again.
Alex, I'm curious about your thoughts on this. I mean, you're the big Tesla fan of the group. What do you make of like, let's, before we get to the robotaxi, because obviously I think our views are more aligned on that than maybe on the EV side. I mean, right? Like if anybody has the scale, in theory, the innovation, the record of pushing the technology forward, like to make a, like on paper, right? Like now I have obviously, there's a lot of reasons why I don't think Tesla could ever make an affordable EV, but if someone should be pushing for that, right? If that's an achievable goal and the leader of the EV industry should be pushing for that, and Tesla's the leader of the EV industry. And so like, what's going on here, Alex? Like,
well, I'm honestly disappointed that, well, we don't really know, do we, if they've actually canceled $25,000 EV, or if he's just kind of saying the standard passenger car Model 2 is gone, but they're pretending that the unreleased robotaxi design is the same thing because it's on the same platform. I don't know. I mean,
does it make sense for robotaxi to be on a low cost platform though?
I mean, look, in the future, on a long enough timeline, everyone will offer a robotaxi. Or let's just say there will be L4 autonomy available on a variety of platforms in the same way that Lyft started with like an inexpensive band of vehicle and Uber started with a black car. Now they all offer every band. But look, I activate FSD once a week for 5 minutes. Then it makes an egregious error. And I just disable it, go back to autopilot for another week. And then I'm perfectly satisfied. I've come to believe that Tesla will be able to deploy some level of robotaxi product. Let me be really clear here. What I mean by this?
Yeah, because Ed is both eyebrows are very raised right now.
Let's do away with the word robotaxi for a second, because robotaxi is a function of. If you're going to develop robotaxi, it needs a common, widely available, inexpensive form factor. You do. But in terms of L4 capability, I'm convinced Tesla can release something with the hardware they've got, with the caveat that the capabilities, the behavioral capabilities, and the safety are bounded by whatever the hardware limitations are. So a mediocre camera system with limited field of view in some scenarios and great software, well, if you want to be conservative, the safe speed and behavioral envelope of that L4 vehicle will be different and almost certainly inferior to a multi-sensor LiDAR vehicle with equivalent software. So a Waymo versus a Tesla in the ODD where I live in Phoenix, like I would add, which is not a complex one, I would absolutely expect and trust the Waymo. I would trust the Waymo much more and expect it to be operated at higher speeds in all scenarios. Whereas a Tesla, my Tesla has limited visibility with mediocre cameras and software unknown. So look, Tesla could announce, they could reveal something on August 8th and then announce that it works with limited ODD. and then they will have met the expectation of some subset of investors. But it is not, it is not in any universe on August 8th going to be a broad level four or level five capable vehicle, no matter what they say. And the form factor will, Ed.
The form factor doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter.
I agree. I think that's one of the most fascinating things about this, which we should probably just get out of the way and just say it, right? Like the whole pitch of Tesla's driving automation tech, right? Like obviously we've all known for a long time that like the shared robotaxi use case makes fundamental sense for this technology, A, for the social benefits, but B, just because you can put a lot of expensive hardware on that vehicle and have it, you know, like the business model can make sense. Whereas selling a Waymo privately is just, it's cost prohibitive and maintenance prohibitive at this point. So they found a weird way to make their existing like traditional car business at least theoretically work with this, right? Which is buy your Model 3. And like 2016 wasn't that long ago. I remember this, right? The pitch was buy your Model 3. Someday we'll flip the switch on the software. It'll be the greatest asset inflation in history, right? And then your vehicle, your car that you just drive normally when you want to drive it is going to go out and work for you, okay? So like that's been the pitch and that's what people bought into. And so like now I'm like, oh, hold on. And like, by the way, people spend $10,000 and up, I think, for that option.
It's 12,000 now. It was 15 at one point.
So I think it was as low as 8.
That's insanity. Originally.
But people are paying these crazy amounts to buy into this vision. And now Elon Musk comes around and is like, well, so, you know, 5 or however many years later, depending on when you bought your car, we still haven't actually delivered on that vision. But now you can buy a whole new car.
Well, we actually don't know what this is going to be. So this is where I'm going to step in and say this. Prediction mode, the Tesla Robotaxi, I'm really curious, is it going to have a steering wheel and pedals? Number one. Because if they don't put steering wheel and pedals, that thing can exist in the ether vaporware sphere forever because they could easily say, if only the federal government would allow us to do this, we could have it. So that's one option if they do that, right? They can show a Tesla Robotaxi, show what the future could be, and blame the federal government FMVSS requirements for not ever actually bringing it. Or they could do one with a steering wheel and, you know, pedals and all that stuff. And again, it can take another 3 or 4 years. We don't know. I mean,
Kirsten, but it doesn't matter. At the point that you have a Model 3 that supposedly has or a Model Y or a Model S or a Model X that all have the hardware that's capable of level 5 full self-driving or whatever FSD beta is, right? Like you can, right? Like clearly what they're trying to do is play, you know, follow the bouncing ball, right? Don't look at all of this,
this
credibility debt that we've built up. Look at the new model, you know, oh, doesn't have a steering wheel, doesn't have a steering wheel, blah, 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 blah. Nothing to do, none of that matters. The vehicle literally doesn't matter. If they can't deploy full self-driving, real actual self-driving, you know, in a way that they take legal liability for the system on the Model 3, on the Model Y, on the Model S, and the Model X, why on earth would they be able to do it on this new model? And even if there is a good explanation for that, even if they can come out and answer that question well, then they've just committed fraud to every single person, against every single person who bought full self-driving for their regular cars.
I have a theory, and no one's going to like it. Not the fans and not you, okay? Tesla could at some point just announce FSD works, but based on the generation of Tesla you own, the capabilities will be very different. So, I mean, just speculating, the early Model S's and X's could have a very low speed capability with in order to compensate for their limited sensor capability relative to new models.
But Alex, you know how complex it is to develop these kinds of systems. The idea that Tesla is going to do version control on like 5 different versions, let alone 10 different versions. Because again, it's not just for the different models, but then if you're saying it's going to be L4, where are these domains? How many domains are they? Like just managing the complexity of just understanding the domains is brilliant.
If I'm Tesla, I would release, and I would call it something else. I, 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 They called, now FSDs call it supervised FSD when you download it. That's what it's called. They could do what I suggested years ago, which is it's FSD, but only functions from the boundary of a parking lot to a supercharger. So it's, they phase it in, but they don't call it a geofence because the fans would hate that. And it's just like, new feature, supercharging FSD. And so now I don't actually have to sit in my car and wait for my point in line to get to the supercharger. It seems ridiculous and pathetic and absurd, and yet it's a very basic feature I would love. And since no other EV manufacturer can possibly offer this, it would look like a win. That's my prediction.
Some
for
of
the next
Tesla's worst performances in parking lots. Summon is garbage. Like, the systems are terrible, and parking lots are actually, you know, it's actually one of the only things Elon Musk has ever said that's like an actual insight into this technology, which is that look, parking lots are actually quite harder than most people think to automate driving.
However, their parking lots are not all created equal, even when the inside the parking lot. So if one goes to, I'm trying to think.
So Tesla's going to go and cherry pick parking lot by parking lot around the entire United States? Like, just
Edward,
think about what that workflow is.
We both know that they do have an internal team of safety drivers and testers in multiple cities. So it's not that hard to believe that Tesla would actually cherry pick a few as like demonstrations of capability and be like, scaling soon. And then it takes 5 more years.
I completely disagree. I think fundamentally Tesla, like if Tesla, I think Tesla can't do L4. If Tesla does L4, then their entire pitch, which is we are going to solve autonomy, like
they're
going to
do
goes
L4,
away.
I promise you, it
makes it clear that there's no such thing. So what I think this robotaxi is about, I think this is another version of what Tesla has done in the past to shore up credibility or confidence. It's not credibility, confidence. Is they've just raised the price of FSD, right? That, and they've said like, oh, well, they're raising the price. Well, it must be close. And they're so confident in it that they're raising the price. Clearly, they can't do that anymore. The FSD installs had actually someone, there's Dustin Moskov on Threads actually done some good breaking down about FSD. Basically, FSD signups and deployments were trending downward until they basically said every car gets it for free. And then all of a sudden it goes up, and they did a really misleading graph that he deconstructed. But the point is that wasn't working anymore. You can't just raise the price and people be like, oh, they must be getting close. You have to do something else. That's what this robotaxi is all about. It's not real. It's never going to exist. It makes no sense in the context of anything that Tesla's done in this driving automation tech. It exists purely as a way to signal the most credulous rubes in the universe that maybe there's a chance that this isn't just a complete fraud. Okay.
Rather than reiterate our positions again and bore Kirsten to tears, let me share a piece of new information, which is kind of fun. So I canceled, because I have two Teslas, I canceled my FSD subscription on one of them because – who cares? FSD was it 13.4.4? I've lost track. I don't care. That latest version was downloaded to both cars under the free 30-day program. And not only did that, was it downloaded and installed, but it automatically switched the car from autopilot on to default to FSD on to default. And it switched a default double stock down to activate to single stock down. And it was on when I just got in the car, which was super annoying. But that was a fascinating example of what frictionless, not just OTA looks like, but frictionless, trial periods would look like for software vehicles in the future. Set aside that FSD is not a valuable product to me. But that was quite fascinating. An aggressive move. Well executed.
It's like there's a startup that like, you know, does home delivery of chainsaws without age verification. Okay. And you're it's so seamless. It's so frictionless. The chainsaw just shows up in my baby's hands. Okay, it's just amazing.
Listen, let's connect some dots here on a related topic. There's a guy in Scottsdale, Todd Thomas. He's with a company called Alden Automotive. They came to our party. And now I'm suddenly connecting dots, because what Alden does is simplify app installs and downloads in vehicles, agnostic across vehicle platforms and OEMs. And it just occurred to me, my visit to Ghost, Ghost had a couple of features that were like, or maybe they could have been individual products, like the ambient driving tech. Imagine if many companies like Ghost and other startups developed like siloed, simple, cool driving automation products. Like ambient driving is one, and the sky's the limit. And how would they make such a feature available on a trial basis to a customer who would have no other access? I mean, who didn't say buy a Tesla? Like, how would I test out FSD sub features if I don't have a Tesla? I can't. They're only on a Tesla. Like, it would be wonderful if there was an actual marketplace for individual ADAS or driving automation products that you could try in any car. And there'd be a trial period. If I like it, you subscribe to it. And that's, you know, we're light years away from being able to do that. But Ghost had features I wish I could add to my Tesla. And that was never going to happen unless Ghost was bought by Tesla and just, you know, integrated what they had. I hope that's the future of software-defined vehicles. Because if we have to wait for manufacturers, for OEMs to, it's going to take 10 plus years for anyone, even like a Ford, to bake the features that will come out of the Latitude division. And what if 6 out of 7 are good, but the 7th isn't? But the 7th is available for Mercedes and is awesome, and I can't get a car that has it all. Anyway, I really hope we see a marketplace for ADAS features in the future that's vehicle agnostic.
So. Well, thanks for taking us down that tangent, Alex. As we wrap up this episode and kind of finalize our thoughts around AVs and EVs being hard, I think that we can all agree that Tesla has benefited from the promotional social posts on X because their stock is up. And this comes in a hilarious moment where hours before Elon Musk called Reuters a bunch of liars and used his platform, one of the largest that exists for a human being, being someone who's not only the wealthiest person in the world, but also has millions of followers on a platform, to call out journalists as liars and then hours later announce essentially the thing that Reuters wrote about.
Yeah, confirm the reporting.
And then got the stock bump.
Yeah, that was really for me the most shocking part of this. Like, Tesla's going to Tesla, but at the point that their core business is falling apart, Morgan Stanley says it doesn't really, they can't keep going in the direction that they're going, and they're going all in on, you know, something that, again, you don't have to understand anything about the technology to know that Elon Musk has just been like being incredibly disingenuous at the very best about this technology by saying it'll be here by the end of the year, every year, and then never explaining why he gets it all wrong. Like, the fact that the stock price has been like short up at all, that, because it was in free fall.
But that's why it feels like, you know, the question I have is, did anyone at Tesla know he was going to tweet that tweet? And I have at least one friend, coworker, who's like, I'm guessing they didn't. So again, this is, you know, Elon's going to Elon, and he explains away the repeated failed deadlines as in jokes when he does present a product as, you know, sometimes I can be a little off on the timeline, and everyone laughs. What happens in August is going to be interesting, and what I'll be watching closely is to see like how many lies there are in this package that they're going to show. You know, and that's to say, like, does he explain away the last 8 years? Does he completely ignore it? Does he throw FSD folks under the bus, if you will, and say, this is actually the real product? What you've been doing is really just helping us build this by being a guinea pig, essentially. Like, what? There are so many questions, and it's going to be really fascinating to see. And then what is the reaction with the stock market, with major fans, and also, you know, the growing number of critics? Like, what do we do with this information? And how much patience will people have? Because people have had a lot of patience with the Cybertruck and a lot of other things. Will they have the same amount of patience? So I have so many questions leading up to August 8th.
Yeah, I'm also just curious. I mean, because we saw in the Walter Isaacson, it was interesting. We saw in the Walter Isaacson book, you know, these two pictures of design studies for the Robotaxi, which didn't really get a lot of like excitement out of the fans or a lot of play when that book came out, which I thought was kind of interesting at the time. And now sort of looking at them and I mean, I assume this, I would not guess that Tesla has some completely different design for the Robotaxi. I'm assuming what we're going to see on August 8th is going to look like that because it looks ripped from a 1970s, you know, sci-fi movie, which means Elon Musk loves it, right?
My understanding was that Franz had like in the background another product, right? That was, you know, he was doing in secret or secret-ish as a backup, right? So which version will we see?
Yeah, but that vehicle, if it is anything like that one that we've seen the design style, you know, the design sort of bucks for, that's a terrible Robotaxi. It's a Robotaxi with the ergonomics of a Lotus Elise. Like, it looks like you have to like, you know, stretch out and lay back, like lay down to get in and out. Like, I don't think you can get out in and out of that vehicle if you're under the or over the age of like 55 maybe. It has no room for luggage. It looks like someone who thinks Sid Mead made cool designs, which, hey, like, guilty, right? Like, I get it. But like, you can't just be like, oh, it looks like something Sid Mead would have made, and it's therefore it's going to be a good Robotaxi. Like, so anyway, we'll see. Like, we'll see. But if that's the design, I mean, Tesla's cooked.
And on that note, welcome to another episode of the Autonicast.
We should note though, the Autonicast is now on Threads. We are posting new episodes there in order to diversify away from X. All three of us are also now on Threads. You can find me there, ratioing every single Elon Musk headline that comes across my feed. So come join Threads, join the ratio. Together we can hopefully leave those kinds of headlines in the past.
Yeah, we'll see. And on that note, thank you for listening to another episode of the Autonicast.